Baseball season is around the corner, and we will be giving out our favorite futures picks on the Just Baseball Show in the lead up to opening day. To go along with that, BetMGM has a brand new offer for our listeners. Use code JustBaseball and place your first BetMGM Sportsbook wager through the BetMGM Sportsbook app of at least $5, and you will receive $150 instantly in additional winnings regardless of your wager's outcome. How to get this offer? Step 1. Download the BetMGM Sports app on iOS or Android or visit BetMGM.com. Step 2. Sign up and deposit at least $5 into your newly created account. Step 3. Place a wager in the amount of at least $5 at standard odds price. Step 4. Once you have placed a bet, you will receive $150 in bonus bets regardless of the outcome of your wager. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369 in New York and call 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 21 plus only, please gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, and 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use code JustBaseball and get $150 when you bet at least $5 on your first wager.
And Bonds hit it high. It's a deep.
This is the Friday Just Baseball Show. It is Friday, March 15th. As always, it's presented by BetMGM. Dylan Cease got traded, so we got to talk about that. Couple of prospects that we'll fly through quickly, and then we're doing the X Factors for each team in the National League Central and the American League Central. Jack McMullen, Aram Layton. We're going to talk about Cease, but I kind of like being in a different room because I don't need to, like, smell and all that, but, like, it's kind of nice to be next to you, I guess.
What do you mean smell?
Do you smell?
No, not right now. I literally put on deodorant right before.
Was it for me or was it?
Yes,
just...
it was, because honestly, when I do them alone, underrated thing, kind of sweat a lot when I do these podcasts.
Do
sometimes.
You actually?
Yeah.
Why? Are you handsy?
No, I just think I'm dialed in. Like with the brain
in.
Power, just a little bit of like the caffeine though. I think it's just high caffeine level starts to sweat a little bit.
I
but
understand.
No, it's fun. I think it's a cool little switch up this time of year every year to be able to do these in person. We always have to try to rig a setup for those watching on YouTube. Like we're doing this episode on top of a vintage video game machine of like Galaga and Frogger, which you didn't know half of those
no,
games.
No, I don't
but
know.
You
both.
Know, you know Pac-Man.
I know Pac-Man. Yeah. My thing was like, is this Atari?
No.
Is it Pong? And you were like, no.
This thing has traveled with us my whole life. Like we had this as when I was a little kid. It was like the coolest gift ever. I think we bought from like a closing bar. And then it has survived every single move and it's still here at my mom's house. So it actually makes a really good table for us to do this. So no, it's always great doing it in person. We're going to be doing that on the call-up too as we're mm-hmm. going to the spring breakout games.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for that as well. I think you're really going to enjoy watching that and also our coverage of that because all the future stars in Major League Baseball. But that kind of leads us into, I think, that the package for Cease, though, because that just seemed to happen way quicker than I thought. Do you think it's a correlation or causation of the Gerrit Cole situation? I think more correlation than causation. That, like, in terms of Cole news comes out, market heats up.
Yeah.
Because I did see some reports that were, I wish I could properly attribute it, but that there was already some buzzing in the industry that teams were putting forward better offers, like starting to up the ante a little bit and then the Cole stuff was happening.
Yeah.
So I think it may have contributed, but I don't think it's the root cause.
What I think kind of happened, I certainly think that the urgency behind moving Cease was spurred by Cole. Like, I do think that there was a ripple effect from Garrett Cole where, you know, you see, oh, the Yankees are going to be aggressive here. If they wanted Snell or Montgomery, they'd do it by now. Mm-hmm. That's my full thought here. And like, hey, the Yankees could still end up with Blake Snell. He's clearly a plan B to what they wanted, and that was Dylan Cease from the White Sox. They didn't get him. Dylan Cease is going to San Diego. I do think as soon as we saw the Cole news and that it could be bad, and the report right now from Heyman is 1 to 2 months, he's going to see Dr. Alatrache, so like we'll see what happens there. Hopefully we have more news. It's crazy that we don't have more already, but what I will say is I do think the news from Cole in turn upped the urgency for an AJ Preller to go say, okay, we got to kick our ass into high gear, because if we don't in the next 12 hours, if we miss our window, Cashman's going to do it.
Yeah.
And we just have to beat him.
Yeah.
And they did, and it was a steep price.
Yeah, it was. And it's funny because we were joking last night, like the reports of the package that Chris Getz, the White Sox GM, was asking for was the sun and the moon.
Yeah.
I'm like, was Thorpe the sun or was Jairo Iriarte the sun? But realistically, you know, some of the packages that were floated were – this always happens. Yep. You get ridiculous packages floated because I think a lot of people just go straight to, you know, MLB pipeline, look at the top
it's
prospects.
Like, okay, give me 1, 2, 4.
Yeah, exactly. I'll spare you 3.
Yeah.
But, like, I honestly think that maybe that was the asking price in the early going because Getz just wanted to set the market really high or just make it clear that, you know, we're not going back and forth much here. Like, we want you to up the ante and start it somewhere. But realistically, where it settled – is what I think was about the value, maybe even a little bit more. Again, Cease is a polarizing player, so you're going to have a lot of different perspectives of, oh, San Diego got fleeced. Oh, this is about fair.
Yeah.
Oh, this wasn't enough for Cease. You're going to get all perspectives because he's a polarizing player.
Which is what makes it an appropriate return. If you get the positive and the negative reaction to it from both fan bases, you know that that was a good deal. And this is 100%. Clearly a good deal. You and I, like, tried guessing when we had that 30-minute between time where we didn't know. I was hell-bent on Dylan Head being the deal because he's a Chicago guy. Impressive that Preller was able to hang on to Dylan Head. Obviously, they're not going to move Jackson. He's on a flight to Seoul, right?
Yeah.
How's Cease getting to Seoul? Are the Padres going to charter a flight to Seoul, or is he going to fly commercial?
I think commercial put him on they got like so many levels now to business class.
Yeah, dude,
that's probably better.
It is.
No one's bothering you. You're by yourself. You have your own little cubicle. I guarantee they do that, and he'll be just fine.
Yeah.
But that side of it's really interesting because he's going to get the ball probably right away, assuming he's ready. I don't know how ramped up he is and things like that.
He's
in terms
great.
Of yeah, I haven't been. I'll be honest, I'm not very tapped into the White Sox spring training right now, but you know. Assuming he's good to go, which, I mean, they probably don't pull the trigger on that trade right now if he wasn't ready to go.
He's good.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's good news. They'll probably be able to throw him in there right now.
Yeah.
The other side is, if you were listening, was it a mailbag that we did where one of the questions was, like, breakout prospects for this coming season?
Yeah, it was prospect that – it wasn't truly breakout. It was prospect that you're high on that you think will become more of a household name in 2024.
And
you ID'd one of those guys.
Jairo Iriarte.
Yeah.
So that was cool because, you know, I think if you're a White Sox fan, hopefully that makes you feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's a guy that legitimately I've had circled that could explode this coming season.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the upside there, we know what Thorpe is too. We can talk about that kind of briefly and then talk about the third piece in Samuel Zavala, which I think that get a tertiary piece on top of those,
for sure,
you know, two arms, I think kind of makes it a really solid package.
So let's start with Drew Thorpe, who is, I mean, playing musical chairs right now.
Poor guy.
He was the headline of the Soto deal, pretty much. You could call Michael King the headline.
Yeah.
But Thorpe was the prospect piece that went back to San Diego in that Juan Soto deal, and then all of a sudden he turns around. After looking great in spring training for the Padres, he turns around and moves to the White Sox, where he'll get up there, like, maybe by the All-Star break. I think it's 30 innings in Somerset, like 30 innings above high A. Why put him in that Charlotte bandbox when he looked really good in spring training? I do want to walk through kind of one-by-one elevator pitch, and then we'll go back and elaborate. Drew Thorpe, and add in anything that I'm missing in like a sentence or two. Drew Thorpe, best changeup of the minor leagues, according to you.
Yes.
Yes. Four-pitch mix. Fastball isn't elite, but the changeup is. Jairo Iriarte, really good fastball, really good slider. He's a two-pitch guy for now, working on a third.
Yeah. Yes. I would say the interesting nuance to that is the more I've dove into Iriarte, the more I've realized that I think command is a bigger question than the third pitch.
Okay.
So the third pitch, it's just that we were talking about it last night, like that turbo, like power changeup in the low 90s that, look, it's not going to be dominant, but I think it's solid enough because that slider has no platoon split. So he can go against like lefties and righties. He can just mix that changeup in enough. I think he can be an above average third pitch. And though I was watching last night, start by start, it got better and better and better.
Yep.
So I think three pitches there, it's a big league starter's arsenal. The command is kind of the question. When he got up to Double-A, started to walk more guys. But the fastball is really unique shape, crazy life, runs it up to 99, and it averaged 96 miles an hour last year. And then the slider is a potential plus-plus pitch if he can command it a little bit better. So you got a three-pitch mix there. Like, he could be a monster. He has the floor of a high-leverage reliever, though, if the command doesn't come along.
So those are the two arms. You got Samuel Zavala, who just played his age 18 season, spent over 100 games in low-A Lake Elsinore. Really talented teenager. He gets to Fort Wayne, blown up. I think I've got 4 for 51 with 19 punchouts in 14 games.
Yeah, that was an aggressive push, classic on brand AJ Preller push. Correct. He's, you know, he's a guy that it's like a relative lower on, right? He's still the number 11 prospect in the Padres system
you
for us.
You hate his ass.
Yeah, that's what always ends up happening, right? It's like, I ranked him 11th. I didn't say he wasn't ranked. Like, I think there's a reason why he was the third piece in a deal like this, right?
Yeah.
There's some people that I've seen that have ranked him as a top 100 guy, and I think that's with a lot of power projection baked in. He is still very thin, very wiry. The EVs for his age are probably right on par, maybe slightly above average, but like it's not – I don't look at him and say, ooh, that's explosive. There's a lot of effort in the swing. Yeah. It's a massive leg kick. People laud him for his patience, but it's passiveness, to be honest, not patience. So he actually needs to swing more in the zone. But that said, he put up good numbers in low A as a teenager. He does draw walks, and there is a lot of room to grow. And I do think the thing that stands out to me is he elevates, consistently elevates. So he's a fun project.
Yeah.
And for the third piece, you could either go with, you know, a high floor guy.
Right.
Or you can go with the upside guy, and if I'm already getting a high floor arm in Drew Thorpe that I think is a guarantee to be a 4 or 5 in the big league rotation, I think can be a 3 now that he's added basically a 5-pitch mix.
Yeah.
And I love pretty much all of his pitches except for the fastball, but it's good enough. And then, you know, you have Iriarte, who is volatile but at least high floor in the respect that he's going to be a big league arm for you one way or another. You know, shoot high for with the third piece.
Yeah. Real quick, I want to go back to the room to grow thing with Zavala because the guys that are teenagers that, you know, you fall in love with, I fall in love with, the prospect industry falls in love with, are 18, 19-year-olds that don't look like 18, 19-year-olds.
Yes.
He is a 19-year-old that looks like a 19-year-old. And there's a lot to be excited about, but the reason Ethan Salas by some is like a top 10 prospect in baseball and by everybody a top 25 prospect in baseball is – he's 17. He doesn't look 17.
No.
Zavala is one of those guys that, like, you can tell is a long ways away.
Yeah.
You're not going to fast-track him.
No.
The only guy that's going to fast-track
AJ
him
Prowl.
Tried fast-tracking him. But, like, that's it, man. So he is somebody that you do have to dream a little bit. And, frankly, I don't have that part of my brain unlocked where I can be creative and be like, yeah, he's going to put on this amount of weight.
Yeah.
His biceps are going to look great. Jaden McDaniels, when he was at Washington, I was like, this guy's going to sign. Like, he's real thin, and then he turns out to be okay because he filled out.
You know, it's funny because that's the most difficult part in this whole thing is the projection and trying to see, like, what guys can be because there's also a push and pull there. And the last thing I'll say on Zavala, and if you want a detailed breakdown, we'll link the article we threw together last night in the episode description. I pretty much put plenty of a breakdown on each of the prospects. Thorpe was a specific, unique one because the Yankees have had this prospect pitching development program that they have that's been phenomenal lately.
You know what it is? It's BYU. You know how, like, a lot of athletes at BYU will go on their mission trip?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's the Yankee mission trip.
It really is. Like, any guy that they don't draft really in the first round, and I even think if they did, they'd still do this. Instead of making their pro debut at the end of their collegiate or high school season, they just throw them in this pitching program, this specialized pitching program, and it's basically a pitch lab. Overhaul their arsenal if they need it or just tweak if they need it. And what do? They add the patented sweeper to Thorpe, so he has that for righties. He still has his kind of bullet slider. He adds a cutter. The fastball goes up a tick. The changeup's still the changeup.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, and he also has a little bit more of a true curveball, and all of a sudden, like, you've got all these different pitches, all these different looks. And that really helps him mask the fastball and also have that get out of jail free card that the changeup is without overusing it. Yeah. And I think that's why Thorpe's going to be really damn good.
Last guy that was involved in the trade was Steven Wilson, who will fly under the radar, I do think, but this is a guy that has made 50-plus appearances each of the last 2 years, had an ERA in the very low threes, I think it was 305, 306 in 2022, and then he came in at a sub-4 again in 2023. That bullpen is so far and away the worst in baseball.
Yes.
I think that Jordan Leisure's major league debut should come in a save situation. Like, that's how bad the bullpen is, and they add a guy that is a solid bullpen piece. I'm not going to macro analyze Steven Wilson because him plugging into the White Sox here, as somebody that grew up with the White Sox, is irrelevant in the grand scheme of 2024.
Yes.
What I will say is Padres got out of a guy that was going to hit arbitration next year. I want to wrap the Cease conversation with what version of Dylan Cease do you think the San Diego Padres are getting? This is clearly a contention move. Do you think this guy can be a frontline guy for a team that is fighting for a postseason berth?
I think he can. And real quick, a note on Steven Wilson, too. That's a flippable piece, right?
Come
deadline time, years of control.
4 years.
4 years, like an Efros type of situation where he might be surprised. If he is pitching to a low mid threes, he could probably get – you could net you a 15
a
for
–
yeah, or even like a borderline top 10 prospect if he's throwing well with the years of control. So that really accentuates the package. But to get back to your Cease question – I think he – I mean, the obvious answer is he can because we've seen him do
right,
it. Because
he's gross.
But do I think he will? I don't know if anybody out there can confidently predict what the hell Dylan Cease is going to do. But what I can say is some of the minds that I respect the most in this industry are not out on Dylan Cease.
They shouldn't be.
And it shouldn't be. And the one thing that I think is kind of telling here is, yes, he's a lot cheaper, but you still have to give up pieces. We're talking about how teams were kind of still hesitant about Snell because of inconsistency, things like that. Cease is also very inconsistent. He's coming off of a bad year.
Yeah.
Snell's coming off of a good year, but I don't think teams really look at it that way because it's kind of been an every other year thing for both of these guys. I think when you look at it from the perspective of would you rather have Cease or Snell, I think a lot of people would say Snell off the top of their head immediately, but when you imagine the price of Cease, the years of control now, because you have 2 years now,
It's going to be 2 for $21 million, I do think. With the way arbitration escalates, I think it's going to be 2 for $21 million.
Like, I'd rather roll the dice there, and, you know, it really is just about the command. You can't really teach this stuff, and I think a change of scenery is going to be huge for him. I don't think it's the most forward-thinking and brilliant analysis, but I also never underestimate the, and I know you'll agree with this, the effect of a lifeless team, a bad clubhouse, bad leadership, and a bad organization. And that's what the Chicago White Sox were, all of those things last year and have been for the last couple of years. I think a change of scenery, pitching in an area that's competitive, for a team that's competitive, I'm not going to pretend that the Padres are the best clubhouse in the world, but I think just getting out of that White Sox clubhouse will be helpful. I think the pitching situation's a lot different with a Musgrove and a Yu Darvish.
He
We've heard Walker talk about how awesome those guys are.
But, like, think about that. Dylan Cease gets to sit there on a plane, sit there in a clubhouse, and ask questions to Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove instead of, I mean, Chris Flexen coming to him.
Michael
Soroka, Garrett Crochet. Like, there's not much there, and he goes to a place where there's some stuff there. So
and the one
enjoyable
thing I've noticed, I mean, we continue to talk to pitchers, whether it's a big league level or at the minor leagues, but even at the big league level, I think it's been more eye-opening, is how much these guys still collaborate, how much they still bounce things off of each other. Walker talks about
it's
all the time.
Tank.
And you know, Walker's just is smart as they come when on the mound. And, like, if that guy's still bouncing things off of people, like, then everybody's doing it, you know?
It's a level of selflessness and, like, giving yourself up in terms of, you know, giving something out in to get better, really, to receive information and get better. What I will say is so much of Dylan C's value is in accumulation. This guy's on the mound all
that's
the time.
That's huge nowadays, too.
Oh, my. It's maybe the most valuable
thing. And they
thing
need
in
that, right? They need it. Was Matt Waldron was ready to slot in at 5, who actually looked pretty good when I saw him, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, just having an innings eating perspective, because Darvish has been a little banged up.
Yeah, Musgrove is the epitome of banged up.
Yep. I mean, at the very least, I think that's where what pushed them over the top. I think it's a great point is even if Cease is not the Cease we saw 2 years ago, if he's still giving you 180 innings at a low fours, it's still probably justifiably worth it because you needed those innings filled bad.
100%. He's also a very easy guy to root for. I was lucky he came on Show and Go with Taylor Davis, and afterwards, as soon as we ended, he didn't say, like, thanks, guys, that was fun. He was like, hey, I've been painting a lot. You guys want to see my paintings? And he just picked up his phone, and he, like, showed us all his paintings. And I was like, this is awesome. I love how quickly you can immediately disconnect from the baseball stuff to go do other stuff. He's going to roll with punches really well.
Mm-hmm.
And rolling with punches is exponentially more important when you are on a team where the games matter.
Yes.
Sorry, but yes. I'm for real. I want to jump into the NL Central here. Before that, quick break.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
All right, let's start with the Chicago Cubs here. Again, we're doing X factors for each team in the National League Central. The Chicago Cubs are one of the stories of the offseason. They are one of the more fascinating teams. For me, this is easy. And again, just like Peter and I did, we did not discuss who our X factors are. So if we have the same guy, that hammers our point home even more. We're going to try and grab a second guy. For me, the Cubs pick was very
easy. Garrett Cooper.
Dom Smith? Is it Christopher Morel?
Yeah, that's pretty much where my eyes went.
Yeah.
And I'll justify just why it wasn't somebody else quick, just flying through it.
Yeah.
Bellinger did it last year.
Yeah.
Not really. I'm a little nervous that he might regress a little bit.
For sure.
But even if he regresses a little, that's kind of what they paid him to do is,
yes.
is progress a little bit, be a 3-win player. Hap is Hap, Swanson, Horner's Horner. And Seiya, I do think, is another option, and that'll be my backup option. But Seiya's been doing it more still over the last couple of years if you look at it cumulatively.
At the end of the day, he is an 800 OPS guy.
Yeah.
And you're paying him. It's one of those things where if he's good, he doesn't change the entire scope of the team. And if he's bad, you still got to play him.
Yep.
My thing with Morel is if this guy can play third base, it's Morel's glove. Like, that's the X factor. If Christopher Morel can play third base, this opens up a world of flexibility for the Cubs.
Yeah. Instead of fast-tracking Matt Shaw.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, Shaw looks like the third baseman of the future. But if Morel can hold down third, all of a sudden, you can move Bellinger to first base. You can have Bush DH. You can have Bush and Wisdom almost be the platoon DH. And then that creates an open runway for PCA while Mike Tauchman holds it down. There are so – that feels like a way better option than trying to shove somebody at third base and having Nick Madrigal and Michael Bush hold down third base. And it's like – what are we doing? I feel a lot less tense if Morel can play third every day.
100%. And the big thing for him is the throwing arm. He's got a cannon, but we talk about it like he throws – he's nasty. Like,
yeah.
First basemen are fighting for their lives trying to catch balls that he's throwing across the diamond. That was definitely where I was going. But then I also went to the pitching side, you know, for the secondary option here because – but here's the thing. You could use Imanaga as the example. Yes, he's getting paid. Yeah. But at the end of the day, like – he needs to pitch, I think, a little bit better than he's getting paid to pitch when you look at the rotation in terms of what they want to achieve.
Especially with Tyone Hurt.
If they want to be more than just a team that can kind of sneak a division win with 92 wins like we've seen kind of in the Central over the last few years, I think you look at Steele, he's going to be solid. I even think Jordan Wicks, like you can't really call him an X-factor because I feel like you kind of know what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a low to mid fours, can give you good innings and be solid. Hendricks. He's Kyle Hendricks. So I look at it from – and I'm not going to say Wisniewski because I don't even know if he's going to grab that fifth spot. So for me, Imanaga is a big one because if he's a 4 ERA guy, I think they're in a little bit of trouble because they don't have that clear cut two.
Yep.
If he's a low to mid threes guy, then I think they're in a much better spot, and I think they need him to be that to be you know the team that they're hoping to be.
Do you think he has that ability with that being his home ballpark?
I think he – does, I just don't know if it's his first season. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's going to be adjustments. Oh, okay, big league hitters can clip these at the top.
Right.
But if I set it up with this pitch, or if I sequence it this way, or if I locate it here, like, there's a lot of things that I think are going to go into it. I do really like the idea of him working with Yan Gomes, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to really help smooth the transition. I think he's going to be somewhere in between. okay. in this first year. And I actually love the Fangraphs projection for him there at 3.7.
Oh, that is pretty good.
I think he's going to be right around there. And if he's there, I think they're in decent shape.
100%. All right, let's jump over to the St. Louis Cardinals. Cardinals obviously coming off of a last-place finish in the NL Central. They're way better than that on paper. They're probably one of the top 5, 6, 7 lineups in all of baseball. Pitching is where the question is. I could point to Sonny Gray. I'm not going to do that. I'm actually going to go back to the lineup. I think Jordan Walker's success could be instrumental to the St. Louis Cardinals kind of blowing the top off everything. Walker last year was a .2 win player. Defense certainly accounted for that, but that was a 117-game sample. Just 16 homers for Walker. Mm-hmm. That number could, I don't want to say realistically triple, but a legitimate goal for him at some point is at least double and borderline triple. The other thing to remember with Jordan Walker is he's younger than Colson Montgomery, Dylan Cruz, Wyatt Langford. He's 8 months younger than the it guy in minor league baseball right now in Chase DeLauter. 8 months younger than DeLauter. So we're talking about a guy that already has his first full season under his belt. I wonder if the stress is taken off of him now and he can almost play free reign and he can be that 30-homer guy.
I think it is because, you know, that was something we talked about at the end of last year. I put a thread together and actually I wrote a piece on Walker's swing adjustments that, you know, that he had made going into, you know, I think when they sent him back to Memphis, adjusted some things, came back, and then really just hit his stride. Final 40 games of the year, this dude hit .303, .372, .497.
Yeah.
So, I mean, doing that, 6 home runs, you had 15 extra base hits. He struck out at a 22.5% clip. Like, all of these things were what we were kind of waiting for. It all started to come together for him. Remember, he was learning a new position, adjusting to MLB pitching.
And he was on a bad team. Yeah. Like, he was on a team with a bunch of vets that were probably pissed.
Yes. So I think he saw what he can do in the back third of the year.
Yeah.
And then I also think he is just a freak of freaks.
Yeah.
He could hit 35 plus this year. If it all comes together, I think realistically he hits 30.
Yeah.
And if they get double the home run output from him, you could say Mason Wynn, but I think he's not the answer because once Tommy Edman's back, even if Mason Wynn struggles, you could slap Tommy Edman at shortstop and you've got an elite defensive shorts up there who can, assuming he's healthy, can swing it.
Right.
So I feel like you have more of a safety net there, like you said, whereas corner outfield, yes, they can slug. They got some guys that can slug, but to really put this team over the top, like you don't want to rely on, you know, you already are relying on Burleson a little bit. You don't want to rely on Dylan Carlson. You don't want to rely on some of these other guys that are here. Like you want a corner masher, and Walker's the one guy that can really become a corner masher for them.
Peter and I joked, I still think Carlson, like, this is the year for Dylan Carlson. Alec Bohm and Dylan Carlson are the two guys where I'm like, this is the year.
He's 25 still.
I know, it's just crazy.
This is a switch-hitting guy that needs to not switch hit.
Dylan Carlson, younger than River Ryan.
Yes. Another en vogue prospect right now. I saw him ranked ahead of Andrew Painter by some over the last month.
Did you have a different one?
Yeah, so honestly, like that, I thought it was too clear cut there. I think the supplemental answer would be a Dylan Carlson or Mason Wynn because right now with Tommy Edman out, you need one of those guys to perform. If both of them struggle, now you're in trouble. Tommy Edman can't play both. He's really talented defensively, but he can't do that in terms of both at the same time. So my kind of supplemental answer would be one of Wynn or Carlson taking a step forward. Obviously, Wynn is a lot more talented, and that's not to slight Carlson. Wynn's a freak. But, you know, Wynn could be a little bit of a work in progress, too. He just turned 22. So I just need one of those guys to be, you know, an everyday, above slightly above average regular. So that's why I don't want to put too much pressure on one of them.
Part of me also wanted to say the tandem of Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson. Like, if they're both fart noises, that's going to be tough. Mm-hmm. That's going to be bad.
They're in trouble if that's the case.
Yeah. Jumping to the Milwaukee Brewers here. This was actually a very easy one for me because there is so much depth in that lineup. If somebody doesn't work, they're just going to turn to somebody else. And they've got guys that seem ready. I turn to the rotation sans Burns now. Freddy Peralta is good enough to be a top-of-the-line 2, low-end 1. That's what he's tasked with doing. But then you look at the remainder of the rotation. D.L. Hall is my X factor. Mm-hmm. They need a 2 bad. And D.L. Hall may have the shit to be a 2.
He's going to shove.
If he does, that's huge for Milwaukee. If he doesn't, I worry about the combination of Miley and Ray, and isn't Jacob Junis?
Jacob Junis.
Yeah, like it's really hard to look at. I hope Gasser gets ample run in the big league rotation, but DL Hall for me, if Freddie and Hall can put together back-to-back shutdown performances in the first week of the season, I'm off to a rip-roaring start if I'm a Brewers fan.
I'm with you. And I think Hall is a perfect X-factor because we could IDing Dylan Carlson as an X-factor is kind of annoying because it's like, is he 0.5 war or is he 2 war?
You know, yeah, right.
Whereas, you know, Mason Wynn's more of a,
Is he four?
And then, you know, you could have also said Lars Nootbaar, but he's hurt to start the year. Yeah. I think he's going to be back kind of, he might be back for the start of the season.
And Nootbaar has a very high floor,
yeah,
it seems.
Yeah, like, and he can play center field. Lower. Yeah. So, you know, I think you could have thrown Burleson into that equation instead. But, no, I think for me, that's the obvious answer because Hall has the potential to be a mid-rotation starter.
Yes.
The tweaks that he made, we talked about it. I'm all in on it. When we do breakout pitcher stuff like that, he's going to be one of my guys.
Yeah.
But now with the news of Devin Williams, and kind of tying that in, you know, here with, what was it, multiple stress fractures in his back?
I saw two. How do you get two?
I don't know how you get two. But that is horrible news. He's going to be out for a couple of months. At least it's not an arm issue.
Yeah, it sounds like all-star break. Yeah.
So I look at the bullpen and kind of just take your pick. I'll go more Abner Uribe than Pyams because Pyams is just solid and has been good for them.
Yeah.
But in terms of you want to try to replace lights out closer, no one's going to replace Devin Williams. But if you want to try to hedge as much of the loss
grab
as possible.
Grab the guy that throws 102.
The guy that throws 102 with a demon slider It has a chance to be that. So Abner Uribe has some of the best stuff you're going to see in professional baseball.
Yeah.
We've seen him have success. He's a psycho on the mound. If he can be around the zone and be effective, and he looked good in stints last year, that's a guy that could replace a lot of what they're missing in the back end of the bullpen, which, let's be real, like the rotation, we just talked about it, that's already a little bit thin. They're going to need the bullpen to step up too, and I think that's a big part of it.
They need a strong suit aside from offensive quantity. They have offensive quantity now. Is there quality? In some, but like their strong suit right now is the – best version of Leonard Hamilton's Florida State men's basketball teams where they're just going to go 12 deep and Pat Williams is a top five pick and he's the ninth man.
I was going to say this is one of the best benches in terms of like not just like talent right now but just like player value. Joey Ortiz, top 50, 60
Garrett
prospect.
Mitchell,
Joey Weimer is a stud and I love like the adjustments he made, phenomenal defender and center. Andrew Monasterio is like a good bench player.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really solid bench. So I like what they've got offensively. They got a lot of different options to plug and play, and that's why I didn't go that route in terms of X factors there because I think there's a lot of guys that you can replace if they struggle.
The Cincinnati Reds, I ID'd one guy that really there's no replacement for. The Reds did a great job this offseason. I think aside from the Dodgers, they are the winner. I called them, the darling of the offseason, right? Jamer Candelario was a huge get, especially now with Noelvi Marte suspended. You heard that conversation last week. They are truly 7, 8, or 9 options deep in that starting rotation. They've got guys that they will be able to turn to if some of them don't work out. That infield, crowded. The outfield, still crowded. There's one place that's a sore spot. It is behind the plate.
Yeah.
Tyler Stevenson was horrible last year. He was a negative win player.
Yeah.
The backup plan is Luke Maley. They have nothing going on the farm. Tyler Stevenson is the biggest X factor in this division.
I don't disagree because also we've seen what he can be. Especially, he's not the best defender,
but like,
defender in the
can't
world.
Can't hit 320.
Yeah, he can rake, and you know, and he can be a passable defender. If Stevenson hits the length that gives this lineup, you know, because I mean we're looking at, if you look at roster resource, like the 6, 7, 8 hitters would be any assortment of Jonathan India, Will Benson, Christian Encarnacion, Strand. I mean.
That's amazing.
I'm not the biggest India guy, but I figure he's going to bounce back a little bit this year. Benson could has 25 home run power, maybe even – well, he's more power than that, but he's probably a 25 home run guy. CES in that stadium can hit 30 bombs.
Yes.
And those are your back end of the lineup type of hitters. I think that Stevenson, if he can be anything close to what we've seen in the past, 1 through 9, there's really no breaks in this lineup, even if there isn't that – proven superstar just yet. So I love that answer. You could go Frankie Montas, but I think with him already getting the ball opening day, all the hype about him in terms of the Reds saying he's back.
Yeah.
It's one of those where we got to see it to believe it, but I'm not going to label him as an X factor because he's literally getting the ball opening day.
Right.
They clearly feel really good about him. I think you could really just do another one of those cop-out answers and say any of the youngsters, because Lodolo's hurt. That stress reaction just continues to be a problem. Yeah. But I think any of Hunter Green, Graham Ashcraft, like Andrew Abbott, I think you could make that answer for.
I think Ashcraft, if I were to single out one guy, it'd be Ashcraft, because like the numbers were really not that good last year at all.
He fell off pretty quick. So I would say Ashcraft is probably the answer there, because you know we saw him dominate, you know, for a couple starts here and there, have nice stretches, and then really, really struggle. Nick Martinez is safe and solid. Abbott, you know, did kind of tail off at the end of the year, but he threw so many innings.
He's a back-end lefty.
He's a back-end lefty. That's what he's going to be. Yeah. Ashcraft, like, what is he? Is he a guy that ends up in the bullpen? Is he a guy that could be closer to a, you know, a good four? I don't know.
I see an 100-mile-an-hour cutter, and I'm like, you need to be way better than you are.
Yep. And so I think Ashcraft is probably my guy.
Yeah. All right. Finishing the NL Central with the Pittsburgh Pirates, I'm going to save you the frilly background stuff. Like, the Pirates, they hope to contend for this division. I don't know if they have the pitching to contend for this division. The big X factor for me is Henry Davis.
Yeah.
Like, who are you? Are you a catcher? Yasmani Grandal hasn't run in, like, weeks because he's dealing with plantar fasciitis.
Ooh, that's awesome.
Andy Rodriguez is out for the entirety of the year. He tore his UCL on a swing in the Dominican Winter League. So Henry Davis, the guy that was moved off of the catching position to go play right field to make his major league debut last year, and at the beginning of the offseason, we were talking about this guy ditching catching entirely, is now forced into pretty much everyday catcher reps. Who are you?
Did you hear he went to Driveline, too?
Oh, hell yeah, man.
Yeah, that's always fun. Guy goes to Driveline now, confirmation bias every home run. No, but that I mean, the thing is, one, yes, now he's back behind the dish, and he's their catcher. Two, this guy has 30 home run pop.
Yes.
That's the thing, is we're picking guys that have this massive upside. And he has this massive upside. Yeah, you could say O'Neill Cruz, but the expectation is that O'Neill Cruz is going to be one of their best players.
I was just telling you, he's on a very, very short list of guys that can go 40-40.
I think Brian Hayes is going to finally make that leap we've been waiting for, but he's a guaranteed 3-win player.
Yeah, at his worst, he's 3 wins.
You could say maybe like a Rowdy Tellez or whatever, but like I can't get imaginative with guys like that. So, yeah, I think it's pretty clear-cut. I think it's pretty clear-cut what you said with Henry Davis. And you know, you could look at some of the other options, but it just doesn't seem to really factor in for me there. My supplemental answer would be Luis Ortiz, because I know that Skeens, Jared Jones, I know they're going to be fun and interesting.
Yeah.
But when you look at the rotation, Marco Gonzalez has been getting pillaged so far in spring training. He's had a nerve issue in the past or something like that, so like that's a little concerning. I like Keller, obviously. They extended him. That's their guy. Perez is going to be a safe back-end lefty type.
Yeah.
But you know who's grabbing that third spot in the rotation? I think it's silly to expect a rookie to do that.
Right.
And Ortiz is the one guy that has some big league time. And Ortiz is also, I mean, you've seen it first and foremost. Like, you've seen it up close and personal.
Yeah.
He can be disgusting. He can be a mid-rotation arm. But we've seen kind of two sides of Luis Ortiz. Spring training, we're starting to see that good side again. If Ortiz is, you know, closer to that four or you know, low end three type, this team could be really interesting, because then you're bumping up prospects to fill the 4 and 5 spot, not the 3 spot, which if that's happening, you're probably not in a good spot.
Yeah, 100%. All right, we are going to wrap with the AL Central. Before that, one more break. All right, the American League Central. I want to start with the three teams that have immense enjoyment, then the team that's kind of fun, kind of frisky, and then we'll end with the White Sox. The Cleveland Guardians, I didn't ID a guy. It's a position for me, and we've just – I'm beating a dead horse with this position. But all I wrote down – and I've got a couple sentences on each team. The Guardians, all I wrote down is the shortstop, question mark, question mark, question mark. Whoever plays shortstop is the X factor.
Fair enough, dude. Like, we've talked about on the call-up of Angel Martinez and how he's looked good. Like, does that – does he take second base and force Andre Jimenez over to shortstop? Now it seems like maybe not. I don't know. Does Brian Rocchio ever get the keys? It doesn't seem like it. Gabriel Arias, like, yeah, he's a safe option for now, but he's been underwhelming. And also one of those guys that you always – he's got the NBA effect going on him. Arias is 24, just turned 24. Like, that's the NBA effect
played,
right now.
Was it the 2022 postseason where he played first base?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mind-blowing when he did that. I'm like, defense is the thing. Like, defense.
Yeah, what are we doing?
He's good at it. But, you know, I think that's an awesome answer. I also kind of feel the same way about center field. Up the middle is just a little bit of a head-scratcher. And I don't want to identify Miles Straw as an X factor, but I do want to identify center field, because can DeLauder get up by the end of the year and help them? I don't think he's going to be up early in the year, but look, we've seen from DeLauder, the approach is great, the field of hits great. There's been a lot of impressive things in spring training. I could subscribe to the belief that by July, he's ready to go. He finished the year in Double A, also played in the Arizona Fall League, put up numbers everywhere. But maybe Florial plugs in there. Maybe Tyler Freeman plugs in there.
Freeman has looked good this spring. I will also
say, swiping bags too.
What do you get from Will Brennan too? Could Will Brennan play center field? All these guys have more impact than Straw.
Correct.
All of them.
Correct. And I think if any of them can show that, you know, none of them are going to be Straw level defenders, but if they can be good defenders in center field, then it really gets hard to justify Straw. So I'm going to take the same kind of approach that you took and say center field, because I think it's equally, if not more important, given their situation, and they have so many different options. So can one of these guys make that leap up? I do also think you could make the case for the setup spot too.
Yeah.
And you could ID who you think is the second best reliever in this bullpen, but look, I'm not going to doubt the Guardians' ability to identify relievers, but Class A, it was a down year for him last year. And then, you know, it's not quite murderer's row in the bullpen.
No, I thought moving Andiel De Los Santos was bizarre.
Really weird. I didn't get that. And then, I mean, who's going to be the setup guy? Scott, according to Roster Resource, you got Scott Barlow. You got Sam
Henches.
We love Nick Sandlin. If he's healthy, he can be nasty. Yeah. But, you know, Eli Morgan, Tim Herron. I like these options, but, like, who's the setup guy? That'd be interesting to see.
It'll be very interesting to see.
James Karinchak.
Karinchak. Shane Bieber, who is he?
Who is he?
This year, who is he? Okay. I'm going to give you an innings number and an ERA number, and you tell me over or under.
Okay.
135 innings for Shane Bieber.
I'm going to go over.
He's going to will his way over.
He's just effective at 92, 91. Yeah. It's crazy.
3.8 ERA.
Slightly under.
I think he wills his way to both.
Yeah.
But I feel very good with where I set those lines.
No, those are good lines. I think it's going to be about 140, 145, 50 innings at a 3.6, 3.7. And if he does that, they're in good shape.
And
he
might get a bag because he'll be doing it at 91.
I hope he does. I think one other name that you could identify if you just want to, like, not be position X factors and stick to the player thing. Bo Naylor. I just think he can be one of the better young catchers in the game.
Yeah.
Which is saying a lot because there's some really good young catchers. He can hit for power. He's really improved defensively. He's fast.
Yes.
He gets on base with the best of them.
He's twitchy.
He's as athletic of a catcher. He's the new age catcher.
Yeah.
He could be a monster. And that's a position that they got no production from until he came up last year.
Yeah.
Full season of Bo Naylor can be a difference maker for them.
All right, the Minnesota Twins, as we get into Minnesota. You know, the lineup, I was very tempted to say Carlos Correa, but I'm not going to because I just expect Correa to be much better than he was last year. I go to the rotation now. For me, it's Chris Paddock. He's thrown 27 regular season innings in a Twins uniform since coming over from San Diego in 2021. In 2021, the last year that he threw 100 or more innings, he was not good. I think the ERA was over 5, right?
Yeah.
And then he works his way back from TJ. I think it was TJ.
Mm-hmm.
If he is even showing trace amounts of what he had in 2019 when he burst onto the scene, I mean, they've got one of the stronger rotations in baseball. I would put them in the top half right now when it comes to Pablo, Ryan, Ober. I do like Louis Varland as a 5.
I do
like him a lot. So, okay, I've got the 4. You've got the 5.
Barwin's my X factor because I think he's got more potential. I do at this point.
I agree. I just think, like, we've already seen it from Paddock. Can he regain it?
And he's, you know, he was flirting with triple digits last year, and he's super talented. You remember who he was traded for? Or who he came up with?
Marlins.
Yeah. Do you know who he was traded for?
No.
42-year-old Fernando Rodney.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
But he shot the bow and arrow. It was sick.
Yeah, not for the Marlins. He went from 0.62 ERA, it was like a 0.52 ERA, to legitimately, I think, a 5. And they didn't pick up the option in the next year. But, yeah, that was an all-time bad one, right? And Marlins fans knew it right when it went down.
Yeah.
But for me, it's Varland just because I think there's a little bit more unknown for better and for worse here with Varland, and I think he's just a good arm, man. He's still kind of working to put it all together. The long ball has burned him at times, but he's got a pretty good arsenal. The fastball can get on you kind of quick. He throws hard. I think Varland could be one of the better fives if Paddock solidifies the four in baseball. I also think Bailey Ober is like a legit three this year.
Oh, yeah.
I'm already a believer in him.
He wasn't an X factor because of what he showed last year.
He's too safe.
Yeah, like he kind of bodied me last year, and this year I'm not gonna I'm not gonna let him body me because I already think he's good.
And with Descofani, you know, on the shelf, I think it makes a lot of sense that you know that Varland could be that guy. I do want to plug, but I don't know when he's gonna be healthy yet. But I do think he can actually be a unique X factor for this team in terms of like, you know, I think just a weapon that can really be an option for them and help them in a lot of different ways is Matt Canarino. Mm-hmm. Had him on the call-up, and, you know, just a really awesome dude. But in terms of stuff, you're probably not going to find a guy outside the top 100 or just isn't ranked as a top prospect with better stuff than Matt Canarino. He's 26. He's had, you know, some arm issues. Yeah. But it's two-plus pitches, potentially a third-plus pitch. Not only could he plug into the rotation if they want to try that, he could be a multi-inning reliever. He could be a Swiss Army knife.
He's funky.
Menace for them. So that's another name to watch.
I do like it. The Tigers, look at me, Casey Mize. No,
I mean.
Yes, but Jack Flaherty's the answer. It's any of those mid-rotation arms behind Skubal. It is Mize, Manning, Flaherty, Maeda. I could have picked any of them.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick Casey Mize because he's my favorite, and I have a soft spot for him. But you can go with any of those guys, and I'm not going to bat an eye. I think Mize and Manning, this is the last year where they can like prove that they take a step. I actually give Mize more time because he was dealing with injury. Manning, it's just like, what do we got going on here?
Yeah, I'm really interested to find out. I was looking at like Reese Olson as well because I think he's becoming a popular name that could really make a leap.
He's looked good.
Yeah,
that's
he's
the thing.
Good.
So like, I think he's a breakout guy.
Correct.
I don't view him as an X.
I agree.
Guy.
I think Parker Meadows. Mm-hmm. Because of what he brings to this team. So you look at the lineup, I think a lot of guys that can mash. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys that can swing it in terms of you look at Torkelson, Kerry Carpenter, Colt Keith. Javi Baez can hit home runs. But if you think about what he's – I know he's striking.
I got to pull up these numbers,
Right, but you look at the lineup, it's mostly power-oriented guys. Jake Rogers, it's all home runs. I think having a guy that's speedy, can steal bags – can play. I mean, Meadows is posting, you know, elite run times.
Yeah.
Can play a good center field. Yes, Green can plug into center. I don't think they want
he's
that.
He's a right fielder. Yeah.
So I'm looking at him as like that's a dynamic option. They're kind of missing that dynamic outfielder outside of Riley Green.
Yeah.
And again, they don't really want to run him out in center field. I really feel like Meadows can fill a leadoff and dynamic, speedy defense, a little bit of power role. That you know that they need to balance out that lineup.
All right, OPS for Javi Baez this spring: 25 plate appearances,
291,
125.
Dude, I've never seen a guy give less of a shit. And the WBC was the perfect example of that because he actually gave a little bit of a shit and he played really well.
Yeah, he was the NLCS MVP
against good pitching.
He's good when the games matter. He's 1-for-22 with 11 punch outs. I mean,
he doesn't care. Dude.
He
just
doesn't care.
I wish there was more to it because a lot of times there is with him. I think he doesn't care.
Two more teams. The Kansas City Royals. I want to be the second to last team here. The Royals got. I use the word frisky. They got frisky this offseason, and they go and grab Seth Lugo. They go and grab Michael Wacha. They gave Bobby Witt a massive extension. They're clearly interested in elevating this young core and giving them the opportunity to play competitive games longer into the season. I think a big part of that could be on the shoulders of Brady Singer. And Brady Singer, for me, is my X factor. He's a super two guy. So he's in his second of four arbiters. He's got ARB 3 next year, and then he's got ARB 4, his final year of arbitration in 26. They got to make a decision on him at some point very soon. After the 2022 season, I was like, oh, extend him right now, right? He had a low threes in like 150 innings. He looked great. He wasn't walking anybody. Still wasn't walking anybody last year, but the ERA jumped from 3.5 to 5.5 in the same number of innings, 153 to 159. Here's the difference. And Brady Singer's sinker is really the X factor here. Brady Singer's sinker in 2022 sat 94. Opponents hit 250 against it. They slugged under 400. So good pitch, good primary pitch. In 2023, sinker was down two ticks from 94 to 92. Opponents hit 340. They slugged 550 against it. If Singer gets the sinker back, I think this guy can get back to that two or three that they think he can be. They found their one for now. I don't know how... I don't know if Reagan's is a one or like he's doing this Jake Arrieta out-of-body experience thing. But they have to find that other controllable two. And this is the opportunity for Brady Singer to put himself back on the map.
And I think you feel good about Lugo being just a big league solid starter.
Lugo and Waka, I have no concerns.
And I'm with you. So, I mean, Singer could really be what puts that rotation over the top. I look at the offense because I still think, it was nice to add Hunter Renfroe, but, you know, you look at the lineup, it's still a little bit top-heavy in terms of it's Bobby Witt Jr. Salvi Perez, obviously, is another proven guy. But then you look around, it's like, okay, what are you going to get from MJ Melendez? Hunter Renfroe, you kind of know what you're going to get. It's nothing that's going to change your offense, but it can help Massey, Michael Garcia, Kyle Isbell. Like, what are you getting from those guys? Vinny Pascantino, for me, like, yes, we know how good he can be, so I think that's what makes him – you know, maybe not the obvious answer, but I think they need him to be everything that I think he can be, right? Where I was floating high 800s, 900 OPS, and I still think he can be that. Like, I really do. I mean, Fangraph's projections even have him at, like, an 840 OPS, which is, like, historically
after
conservative.
A year off, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that says a lot. I think if the Royals are going to have any chance at being competitive this year, the pitching side has to happen, but Vinny Pascantino needs to be one of the better. He needs to be Tristan Casas-esque, and I think he can be.
I think he's better than Casas.
I think he can be.
I have both, and I'm sitting here like, I'm gonna think about it in terms of like a fantasy baseball perspective. If I've got both sitting there and I'm torn between the two of them, I'm hitting Vinny P. And it's not just because the name is longer and sexier.
he's a more well-rounded hitter. Casas has like the power that is hard to find, but.
Yeah,
I mean, Vinny walks a ton too, and doesn't strike out at all, and he's got juice also.
Yeah, let's wrap with the Chicago White Sox. Simple for me. Andrew Vaughn, are you good at baseball? Like, we need to figure that out this year. We're hitting the point where Vaughn is into arbitration. He's coming off of a career best 0.3 F-war season. He was forced into a corner outfield that's going to dock his WAR like crazy. It's Schwarber-esque. But even then, man, his best WRC plus in his career, do you have it in front of you?
No.
What do you think it is? He's played three full seasons at this point. And we were sold on this guy being the best college bat in a decade.
105?
113.
Okay.
But even then, like,
That's not good. No, not when you're giving zero positional value.
Walk rate. This guy had elite plate discipline in college. It was like 60 walks to like 15 punchouts in his draft year. He's been under 6% the last 2 years. Where does that go? Honest to God, I think it's like infectious with the White Sox.
I agree. That's what I'm saying.
Like, how does a guy like Andrew Vaughn, who didn't swing at anything, and when he did swing, he hit the ball out of the ballpark or he hit it into the gap at Berkeley, how do you get to the big leagues and your walk rate, like, shrinks in size 3X? Bizarre to me. If this guy can give me that 125 WRC plus that we've been begging for and can play a fine first base and gives me a two-win season.
Yep.
I feel good about him moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely huge. And I think it's fair to note, you know, he skipped a lot of the development process, but like at this point,
you've got 3 years
of it. You can't use that as an excuse pretty much starting now.
Yeah.
So like that's kind of if he is bad or just subpar this year, I think you kind of got to look at it and say the ship has sailed.
Yeah.
And that's tough.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. I think that's the obvious answer. Outside of him, it's got to be Garrett Crochet.
Yes.
And Crochet, you know, moving back to the rotation, if he can stay healthy. Look, the fact that the White Sox were able to get Thorpe and Iriarte is huge because if you look at 2025 now, there's not a lot of options that you can say, okay, that guy's going to be in the rotation.
Yeah.
If Crochet can grab a spot for them. Not they need a lefty, first of all, because Noah Schultz is a ways away.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives them a lefty. You know, we'll see if Jake Eater can factor in and all that good stuff. But if Crochet, 24 years old, 11th overall pick, can pitch like we've seen him so far this spring and things like that, I think that changes a lot, not only for the White Sox this season to be a little bit more competitive than we thought, but also just changes the outlook for their franchise when you have, you know, a really exciting potential middle rotation, even better than that, type of left-handed starter for you that just they just sorely need guys that you can sharpie into the rotation for the next couple of years instead of just dry erase and get ready to wipe that off when you either DFA him or dump him for a lottery ticket prospect.
So Crochet has been starting games. So he's been seeing big leaguers the entirety of this big league spring. It's not like he's seeing double-A lineups. Garrett Crochet has thrown 6 innings, 5 hits, no runs, 9 punchouts, no walks in 6 innings. I'm a big fan of that. We saw him punch out Shohei Ohtani. He went like viral for that, right? First Dodger AB for Ohtani. Crochet punches him looking after making him look silly on a slider, too. Moving forward, in 2025, if you can watch an assortment of Crochet, Nestrini, Thorpe, and Iriarte, and you hope that, you know, Schultz is farther along in his development, and then you got a Peyton Paulette a little bit farther on in his development, and Eater, right? What do you have in Eater? Shit, does Jared Schuster have a bounce back in him? Yeah. Does Soroka have a bounce back in him? That is watchable.
Yes.
Right now, it's not watchable, but 2025 can become very watchable very quickly.
It could be one of the more fun young rotations in baseball.
Yes.
I mean, Crochet, Iriarte, and Thorpe.
And who would they be throwing to? They'd be throwing to Edgar Carroll, which is fun, too.
I mean, the White Sox, I'll be excited to watch that in 25. I know White Sox fans are like, oh, we heard this last time with the last young group. Yeah, what's the alternative now?
It was also really fun in 2021.
It was fun until it wasn't. Yes. Yeah, exactly. It turned out that they just all had not the best, I would say, personalities to gel in a clubhouse, right? So, and then also each had their own injury issues and a litany of things that we could talk about probably for a full episode. But there's no other option other than to do it over again. And I do think that if Crochet can solidify himself, you start to feel pretty good about the future of the pitching, which, I mean, we haven't been able to say that for a long time. And to have Schultz then coming in behind them, and you figure that they might be able to go get another arm here or there with some of the trades that they might make. Yeah. We'll see how they draft and things like that. They're going to have another, you know, high draft pick for the next couple years. All of a sudden, it could start to come together. But something about Crochet solidifying himself just, again, makes the team much better and more watchable this year. Like, that's the one thing that the White Sox really need, too, is, oh, Crochet's on the bump today? I'll watch.
Yeah.
There's probably so many White Sox fans that just barely want to watch this coming season, and I don't blame them. But every time Crochet's on the bump, oh, let me throw that on. Like, I went through that with the Marlins. There was days where just if a certain pitcher was on the bump, okay, great, I'm throwing it on. Like, when Sandy was really doing his thing, okay, I'm going to throw that on. But, you know, I don't think people are going to want to see Michael Kopech throw that often unless he's coming back. Eric Fetty, like, I don't think
he doesn't have sex appeal.
You're not circling that on the calendar.
It's like the Jesse Schulten starts from last year. I'm like, who?
Yeah,
I'm good.
I am good. Chris Flexen, like, I'm good.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big part of it as well.
Yeah, 100%. This has been the Just Baseball Show. Stay locked on all of our social media channels because we're going to be doing a lot of spring breakout stuff this weekend. Our plan right now, it's 10:22 a.m. in the Fort Lauderdale area. So we're going to go from Fort Lauderdale, we're going to go drive to Bradenton. Then we're going to drive back to Port St. Lucie for Friday. That's going to be Nats-Mets.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight in Bradenton is O's or is Pirates-O's. That's Skeens and Holiday. And then we've got Nats-Mets, which will be Cruz, Wood, Hassel, House, all those guys.
Yeah,
and
Jet Williams,
Acuna, all
Drew
that.
Gilbert.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be fun.
And then we go to Fort Myers on Saturday for Rays Twins, which will also be great. And then we wrap up likely in Jupiter with Astros Cardinals. So a lot of stuff going on. Be locked on all our social. Again, a lot of great editorial stuff going on.
Yes.
Arms right up on the prospect return for Dylan Cease is in the episode description. Go read that. And
did you
can match us with the hoodies.
Yeah,
the
just Apollo. Hopefully yours comes in looking a little bit different than Jack's mic right now, the mic flag.
I didn't even notice.
I didn't want to tell you until the end of the episode because I didn't want it to be one of those things that just distracts the people on YouTube and they just keep looking at the fact that you put the mic flag on upside down. But
sorry, guys.
Yeah, I'm sure that
we
really –
we should just restart the episode.
Let's just run it back. Let's start over.
Okay, welcome to the Just Baseball Show. All right.
We still didn't put the mic flag.
No. Oh, yeah, good point. All right, we'll talk to you guys on Monday.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.